The Fleischmann's Yeast Hour, directed by Rudy Valley. Tonight, five stars. Their names, Leslie Howard, Beatrice Lilly, Robert Wildhack, Sheila Barrett, and baseball's most famous pitcher, Carl Hubbell.
Everybody, this is Rudy Valley and Company, the finest company we have gathered together in many months. Let's take a look at the program. Leslie Howard and Beatrice Lilly, each just returned to this country, each making a first appearance of the new season here on our stage. Sheila Barrett, brilliant young personality caricaturist, who prefaces her return to the Rainbow Room with an engagement here. Robert Wildhack, the man who analyzed the human snore in the movies, here to tell you about yawns before returning to Hollywood. And Carl Hubbell, the one-man pitching staff, whose trusty left arm has hurled the New York Giants to the verge of a pennant. Hubbell, Howard, Lilly, Barrett, and Wildhack, their time is your time for the next 60 minutes. Lend us your ears. It haunted me from the start. Something inside of me started a symphony. Sing with the strings of my heart. Was like a breath of spring. I heard a robin sing about a nest set apart. All nature seemed to be in perfect harmony. Sing with the strings of my heart. Your eyes made sky seem blue again. What else could I do again? Keep repeating through again. I love you, love you. I still recall the thrill. I guess I always will. I hope we'll never depart. Dear, with your lips to mine, a rhapsody divine, sing with the strings of my heart. Presenting Robert Wildhack, professor of sound phenomena at the University of Laughter. Professor Wildhack's analysis of the human snore, the human sneeze, and the human laugh have delighted millions of moviegoers and radio listeners. Tonight he expands his researches to cover that very human action, the yawn. Enter the professor.
Students, dear scattered brains of the great radio classroom, probably everyone knows what a yawn is. Nevertheless, few have said or written much of anything on the subject of what is, no doubt, the most contagious thing in the world. It deserves better, and if I may say so, more exhaustive treatment. Noah Webster, Mr. Century, Mr. Funk, and Mr. Wagnall, the well-known Appleton, and in fact everybody but the prolific Britannica family, all begin their definitions of this form of submaxillary maneuver with the word ostentation. This does not tell us very much. Perhaps in the homes of these dictionary makers, we might hear such remarks as, last evening, while attending Professor McGonagall's lecture, I became so fatigued that I was ostentating with great frequency, just as they might speak of masticating their dinner or osculating their loved ones. The New American Encyclopedia, published in 1864, has the most elaborate definition of all, while the last edition of the Encyclopedia Britannica ignores the subject entirely, just as though nobody ever yawned anymore. Now, as a matter of fact, I'm sure that people are yawning just as much these days as they ever did. And no doubt at this very moment, somebody is trying to stifle. I beg your pardon. Returning to the American Encyclopedia, which was new in 1864, we find this, quote, yawning, a well-known modification of the respiratory movement during a deep inspiration accompanied by a kind of spasmodic contraction of the muscles of the jaw, great elevation of the ribs and shoulder blades, and wide opening of the mouth. It is one of the unmistakable signs of sleepiness and usually ends in a prolonged expiration or a succession of short expirations with more or less inarticulate vocal accompaniment. It is particularly liable to be excited by the sight of others yawning, for the nervous center is the medulla oblongata. The end of quote. But let us inquire further into the causes of yawns that any of the published authorities have seen fit to go. Yawns are caused by lecturers, by preachers, by draught, or low temperature, by people telling the bright remarks of their children, by any but the right man calling on a girl after 9 p.m., by bad air, curfew shall not ring tonight, any one song coming out of your loudspeaker more than 3 times in one evening, by rainy Sundays, a hard day's work, and according to all authorities and universal experience, by the sight of another person yawning. To this list, we may add perhaps the sound of another person yawning. That is, if anybody gives a...
Our opening last night at the Hotel Astor was a most cordial welcome back to the Astor Roof. May I thank all of you who made it so. Just for me, you look divine, and when we dine or dance, dear, my head goes reeling, but not from wine. There's love in my heart, and it will keep on growing. I know that I'm aiming high, but here's a toast to what I want the most, here's love, love in your eyes.
York department store recently held a freckle contest. There were over 400 contestants, with prizes awarded to 12 lucky young fellows and girls. Listen to what Graham McNamee has to say about this.
Many people find freckles.
To my buddies in the American Legion, about to assemble in Cleveland on September 21st for its 18th annual convention, our greetings and best wishes to the Legion. The marching of a million men. Hear the beat of a thousand drums, and then a million fighting Yanks pass by in mighty ranks. They're the legionnaires from every state in the Union. March on to the Legion, to the nation, to the flag long may it wave. With their heads high as they pass by, they're the bravest of the brave. Left and high, and to carry on. They are singing a song as they march along. If it's fun or fight, you've been best all right on the fighting legionnaire. Just returned from England to start work on his New York production of Hamlet, Mr. Leslie Howard. You will hear Mr. Howard tonight in The Miraculous Visitor, a one-act fantasy by Philip Johnson. He'll be assisted by Francesca Bruni and by Lillian Brenard-Tong. For his first appearance of the new season, Mr. Leslie Howard. A strange, fantastic story, this, and a charming one, about a young girl on her marriage eve and the miraculous visitor who came to her in a moment of despair. Scene, a little cottage somewhere in the English countryside. The girl to be married on the morrow to her true love sits watching the golden sunset. To her comes a middle-aged neighbor, fleeing the wrath of a worthless drunken husband. They talk of the all-important wedding day.
And so you're going to live in the little white cottage by the pool, lass? Oh, such a pretty place.
Yes, pretty. The meadow in front of it goes right down to the edge of the pool. And on one side of the house there's a damson tree, and on the other a cherry tree.
Fancy.
I went there this morning very early to look at it.
Did you now?
The sun was barely risen, and there was a mist all about it. It looked kind of not real. Like a dream.
I hope it don't turn out to be damp.
Would you mind if I asked you a question, Mrs. Blake?
Of course not. Go on.
It's this. Why did you marry your husband? Did you really love him?
Love him? I reckon I did.
You and him? Like me and Jem?
Pretty much the same, I reckon. Oh, I were a proud girl when we walked under the elms and through the lanes.
Me and him.
Oh, I reckon you felt as if you were living in a kind of a glory. A glory that made the world and everything seem beautiful.
That's what it were. A kind of a glory.
Because you were in love with one another.
Aye.
Now.
Now, did you say? Aught ill on earth, that's what it is now. Cat and dog, and no two ways about it, neither. Lost him, he beat me. And look at that.
Oh,
see that bruise, see here and that, and look here,
oh,
and look.
No.
I just want to show you what he did to me a fortnight since.
Oh, I don't want to see it. And you walked with him under the elms and thought the world was beautiful. It's terrible, terrible, all that beauty to fade and wither into ugliness.
You don't seem right, eh?
How did it happen?
I don't know. It seems as if we kind of drifted into it. Gradual, like.
From loving one another to hating one another. But how? How could you?
That isn't easy to explain. When folks is in love, it's like as if they can't see things in their ordinary, everyday life. They go about as if they was living in a sort of hazy dream. Of course, that's all right while it lasts. Only it don't last.
Oh, if it could only always be as it has been this spring. All the days of my life, I'll remember the spring of this year. But there's the summer to come, and then the autumn, and then the winter.
Aye, the winter.
Ice on the pool, and the branches of the cherry tree and the damson tree are black and bare.
Oh, you're cold, dearie.
Yes.
Cold. Will you come and sit by the bit of fire that's in the hearth while I go and have a word with your mother? Now, don't you be thinking much about the winter yet a while. You've still got your spring, and you make the most of it while you can. Well, I'll be going now.
May I come in?
Oh, I...
If you'd rather I didn't, I'll go away if you like.
Oh, no, no, please step inside.
Thank you. I'm afraid I frightened you just now.
Oh, no, at least I...
I'm sure I did. I'm very sorry.
Just for a moment, I thought you were someone else. You're very like someone I know. What do you want?
Want? Oh, I don't want anything. I just happened to be passing this way, and I chanced to glance through your open doorway and saw you sitting here, so I came in. Do you mind?
Well, some people might call it poking and prying.
I dare say. But that needn't bother us. Think of all the time we have in front of us. All the years. You and me.
All the years? You and me?
All the beautiful, beautiful years together. Sitting by the pool or under the cherry tree.
Under the cherry tree?
Or the damson tree, whichever we like best. The cherry tree will be the easiest to climb.
Oh, I...
That's why you'll always be finding me in the branches of the damson tree. You'll be frightened and call to me to come down at once. Of course, I shan't. I shall crawl farther out along the branch. Just to tease you, you know.
But what do you know about cherry trees and damson trees?
Well, almost nothing, except that they look pretty. One on each side of a house. A little white house.
Who are you?
Don't you know?
Tell me who you are.
Someone who's very like someone you love.
Yes, you are like him. You are like him.
You're very beautiful.
Tell me who you are.
You're as beautiful as the water lilies on the pool by the little white house. But you mustn't ask me who I am. Not yet.
Not yet.
See, sit down here where you were when I first saw you. And I shall sit at your feet. Now, we're all nice and comfortable. Let's talk, shall we?
Well, I'm afraid I can't. There are things I have to see to.
Oh, well, please. Only a few minutes.
You say that just like a little boy who doesn't want to go to bed.
Well, let's pretend that's what I am. And you're the tender-hearted mother who loves her little son and says, well, just another 5 minutes and then off you go.
Well, very well then, but not a second longer, mind.
All right. Let's sit down. Now, tell me a story.
A story?
Yes, you know, a fairy tale. All mothers tell their little boys fairy tales just before they pack them off to bed.
But you're too old.
Nice people are never too old to listen to fairy tales.
And I don't know any.
Yes, you do.
No, really, I've forgotten all the old ones.
Well, then tell me a new one. Make it up as you go along. Go on. Do try.
Well, let me see.
Shall I begin it for you? Just to give you a start.
Yes, perhaps it would help.
Well, here goes. Once upon a time... There you are.
Once upon a time, there...
There lived.
There lived a princess.
Mm.
Oh, no. Let's have her just an ordinary girl, shall we?
Right. Go on.
And she was engaged to marry a...
You always say betrothed in fairy tales.
I wish you wouldn't keep interrupting. She was betrothed to a...
To a prince?
Oh, no, not a prince.
I see. Just an ordinary girl, betrothed to an ordinary man.
Yes. And she was very, very happy.
Good.
She used to listen to the singing of the birds and...
Well, what sort of birds were they?
Oh, any sort.
I mean, linnets and bullfinches, nightingales?
I dare say.
Uh-huh.
Anyhow, she listened to them in the garden and thought she must be the happiest girl in the world.
Oh, she had a garden?
Yes. Lovely, lovely garden. Full of the most beautiful flowers.
Mm, red, yellow, blue, purple, pink, heliotrope, white.
And many other colors.
Had she anything else besides the garden?
Let me see. Yes, she had a beautiful dress. White and all covered with glittering diamonds.
And she was happy?
Yes. Until...
Oh, something happened.
Yes, the night before her wedding day.
Tell me.
No, I can't, I can't.
Oh, please, please.
Oh, it was cruel, cruel.
Please, tell me what happened to her.
She found she'd been living under a spell. A magic spell that made all the world seem wonderful and beautiful to her. So that she was happy, always happy, walking in her garden, listening to the birds, and dreaming of a future that was to be happier still.
And then the spell was broken?
Yes, broken. And where once she had seen beauty, she saw ugliness, ruin, despair, and pain. The cruel weeds sprang up in the garden, choking and strangling the innocent flowers. The birds sang no more.
And what happened to her?
Happened?
To the girl, the ordinary girl.
I don't know.
Oh, you must. You can't leave off like that. All fairy tales end with and they live happily ever after.
Well, that's what I used to think, but now I...
Come nearer to me. Nearer still. You're not afraid of me, are you?
No, I'm not afraid of you. No. Why, even when you first came into this room, I felt as if... As if...
Yes?
As if you were someone I'd known a very long time.
You felt that?
It's so hard to explain, but I seem to remember the very first day I came to know you.
Tell me about it.
It was one Christmas morning, oh, a very long time ago, when I was a little girl. My father and mother came to my bed and wakened me from sleep and placed a doll in my arms. I remember how excited I was, how I laughed and hugged and kissed it while they stood by, smiling to see me so happy. And then...
Yes?
They went out of the room and left me alone. All the laughing and the excitement had tired me so that I lay back in my pillow very quiet and still. There was no sound in the room, no sound anywhere. Outside, the snow was falling. I closed my eyes and passed the doll to my breast. And at that moment, there came to me the most wonderful feeling of peace and contentment.
As if the greatest miracle that could ever happen had happened to you.
Yes, the greatest miracle.
And tonight, when you were sitting in that chair and I was kneeling by your side, it seemed as though the miracle happened to you again.
More than that. It seemed as though you were the miracle.
But I'm not.
What do you mean?
I'm only the promise of a miracle.
Only the promise?
For the real miracle, the glorious fulfillment, you must wait until... Put on your pretty white dress and walk once more in your garden. No weeds grow there now. Only the flowers and the birds singing. Go there once more and wait.
Wait?
Well, not for very long. Only a little while and then... Then... A miracle... I must go.
You're leaving me?
I must. But remember, not for very long. Only a little while and then...
And then?
Until then, good night, Mother.
Good night, my son.
WEAF, New York. The Rudy Valley Hour, sponsored by the makers of Fleischmann's Yeast and Royal Gelatin Desserts. The hour continues. Still to be heard from Carl Hubbell, Beatrice Lilly, and Sheila Barrett.
If we were to select from among all the rising young people of the New York Review Theater right now, The particular person most likely to succeed in a large way during the next season or two, our choice would almost inevitably turn out to be Miss Sheila Barrett. In a few days, Miss Barrett moves into the top spot in New York nightlife, the most envied position among nightclub entertainers, the Rainbow Room, some 60 stories above our stage. You hear her first, Miss Sheila Barrett. Like most artists of merit, Sheila Barrett has worked hard on the way up, has overcome many obstacles, has experienced many a heartache. Some of this experience in the School of Hard Knocks she has distilled into a series of character studies she offers tonight. The title, You're Not the Type. Scene, a casting office, the outer office of a theatrical talent agency in the Roaring Forties.
No casting today.
Can't use anyone today, sister.
No casting today.
Can't use you today.
No casting today.
No
casting today.
No
casting today.
No
casting today. No casting today.
You mean there's nothing for me today, mister?
You heard me, sister. Nothing doing at all.
Oh, but I heard that Jed Harris was looking for a southern type.
Say, you ain't ever been south of Asbury Park. Not the type, baby. You're not the type.
Of course, I know I don't look too southern, but after all, I'm a child who does. Because us southern people is the most saving of people. You know, down home, everybody thinks my sister, Lucinda Lee, she's the prettiest one. And why shouldn't you be, Mr. Kaysen, director? I'll put it up to you. Why shouldn't you be? She's always going to hairdressers, getting her hair all blondine, the nails all painted red. Because me, I'm different. All I ever do is put a little powder on the end of my nose, run a wet comb through my hair, and there I am.
Yeah, but you're too tall for the part. Not the type at all. If you were a blonde, I might have a part for you in the 10th Road Company of Three Men and a Horse. Producer wants a dumb blonde. Blonde, but dumb.
Well, I can dye my hair, can't I? And you know, it was only this morning that Mama was saying, she says, Millicent, I don't see no reason at all why you can't be a great actress. I don't. I mean, after all, Millicent, you got the looks, and you certainly got the temperament. And after all, Millicent, you got one thing that most of them ain't got, and that's class. Millicent, I never seen nobody with so much class as you. I mean, after all, Mama should know she's a great theater goer. Why, it was only yesterday afternoon she sat through three double features.
Sorry, kid, sorry. Won't do it all. You're not a blonde. Hello. Gordon office wants an English ingenue for Jane Eyre. Well, we'll see what we can dig up.
Well, see, mister, that's for me. I'm great as an English girl. Oh, gee, well, you see me play an English girl. Oh, I say, old boy, you know? I look awfully ducky in a riding habit, old thing. You know, it seems only a fortnight ago, I was sitting at Maidenhead with my master of the hounds, having a spot of tea. Tea, you know, old boy. Tea and scones. What? No, no, of course. You Americans wouldn't know. You go in for those vulgar ham sandwiches.
Cut it out, kid, will you? I got things to do. Now, scram.
Well, say, listen, mister, maybe you'd use a French girl. What about a French girl? Oh, I'm swell as a French girl. Qu'est-ce que vous dites en anglais? What you say? I want to tell you that I would love to play a very, very charming French prima donna. And what do you say? Qu'est-ce que vous dites en anglais? Always, I have a great deal. J'embrasse, oh, so much experience. In Europe, I sing at the Comédie Française, Théâtre Bijou, and then I sing, oh, how you say in America? Now you say that very, very funny place. I am a wow in American vaudeville, n'est-ce pas? No? And what do you say? Always singing, singing, singing. Parlez-moi de nous, parlez-moi de nous.
If you parley any more, sister, I'm going to throw you out on your ear. Now, for the last time, get out.
All right, I'll get out. Say, listen, you don't think you're the first guy that's thrown me out of an office today, do you? Oh, I wouldn't give you that much distinction. Why, in every office, they've got a little glorified office boy sitting there saying, you're not the type, you're not the type. Whatever you do, you're not the type. Well, as far as I'm concerned, whatever you do, you're not the type. I suppose if you want a guy with a beard, he's got to sit home for 3 months and grow a beard. You couldn't just stick it on him, could you? No, that would require too much imagination for you. Do you think I like coming in here, fawning on you, yesing you, doing this endless masquerade? Well, I hate it. I hate it. I'm sorry. You can't help it, you poor, funny little guy. It isn't your fault. Well, you've got your job to do. It isn't your fault that you've got to turn people away to earn that silly little salary. Just that I needed this job so badly. I don't get any salary at all, and I wanted to please you. After all, you sit there behind that desk interviewing people like me. You don't know what goes on. You don't know how scared we are because we want to please you. We want to please you. We have to please you in order to live at all. That's why no matter how many times you keep saying you're not the type, we keep coming back hoping we will be the type. Trying new lines, wearing different clothes, trying to be a different personality. For what? For what? to get a big no from a guy that's never been anything but a little yes man in his whole life? Okay, mister. Yes, you win. I'll go. But I'll be back. I'll be back again tomorrow. And tomorrow. And tomorrow. And the next day. And the next day. And the next day. And someday. Well, believe it or not, mister, I'll be the type.
Adios. In leaving you, it grieves me to say adios. I'll be so lonely for you, only I sigh and cry my adios, adios to you. And in this heart is memory of what used to be, dear, for you and me set apart. Watching and waiting above. Soon it will be blessing our love. Adios. For happy endings I'll return dear to you. With a love true no more to bid you adios. Morena lejos de ti. El alma es una pena porque al partir temo que tú olvides nuestro amor. Hermosa flor, mi alma cautivaste con la fragancia de tu canto. Eres toda mi ilusión. Tú eres mi dulce canción. Adiós. Me voy, linda morena, me voy de aquí. A llorar mi tristeza lejos de ti.
The word doctor originally meant teacher. Now, as a doctor in the old sense as well as the new, Dr. Lee speaks to the young people in our audience, those of high school and college age. Dr. R. E. Lee.
Thank you, Mr. Valley.
If you know anything about baseball, you know all about Carl Hubbell, the greatest pitcher in the modern game. 24 victories, 14 in a row. That's his record this year. A pitching feat that has brought the Giants to the verge of a pennant. By arrangement with Newsweek, the Illustrated News Weekly, we present the most celebrated of southpaws, Carl Hubbell. Carl, as one left-hander to another, do you think it's true what they say about southpaws?
What is that?
Well, they hint around that we're sort of eccentric. In fact, just a bit nuts, so to speak. What do you think?
It's a lie, Rudy. Southpaws are okay. The rest of the world's crazy.
I see, like those Dean boys.
I didn't say that.
I know it. I did. Where do you come from, Carl? Where's your hometown?
Meeker, Oklahoma. Population 250, including southpaws.
Are you married?
Yep.
Who's the girl? Somebody you met in New York or on the circuit?
Oh, no, she's a Meeker girl. I went to high school with her.
I see. Local girl makes good left-hander.
No, sir. Local left-hander makes good girl.
Do you and the missus like to listen to the Fleischman Hour, Carl?
She likes to, and I have to.
Strike one.
Strike one for me. Who would you say is your favorite radio star?
Bing Crosby.
Strike two. And regards to Bing. Have you any children, Carl?
One boy, a year old. The finest kid in the world, except for one thing.
What's that?
He's a right-hander.
Too bad, too bad. Well, maybe he'll outgrow it. Is Mrs. Hubble a baseball fan, Carl?
Oh, yes. She sees all the games at home. If I lose one, she always brings me a big juicy steak that night.
Well, that's mighty fine.
Yeah, she knows I hate steaks.
Well, that's life, Carl. Now tell me this. Do ball players maintain strict training?
By strict, Rudy, I guess you mean like football teams and college crews and like that.
Yes.
Well, no, we don't. You see, our season is longer than any other, and a ball player who lived up to strict training rules would liable to go stale. But we do take care of ourselves. We go to bed early. We don't eat too much or drink too much or hit the bright lights too much.
Have you any training rules on the Giants?
No, you see, Bill...
Who's Bill?
Bill Terry, the Giants' manager. You see, Bill sort of figures that we're all grown men and able to take care of ourselves.
Well, say, tell me confidentially, Carl, off the record, what do you think of Terry?
Off or on the record, Bill Terry's a swell guy.
One thing more. I've been reading a lot about this screwball that you pitch. Just what is a screwball?
Well, it's my Sunday pitch.
What do you mean, Sunday pitch?
It's the one I throw when I get in trouble and I have to bear down. It's kind of an in drop, breaking away from a right-hand batter and into a left-hand.
Well, yes, now they see it, now they don't.
Sometimes they don't.
Carl, as one left-hander to another again, do you think you could teach me to throw the screwball?
No, Rudy, I think the gopher ball is more your type.
What's the gopher ball?
Well, you wind up slowly and peg it in fast. And the next thing you know, the batter's rounding first base and the coach is yelling, go for second, go for second.
Strike three, Valley out. Thanks, Carl. And all the luck in the world against the Yanks.
When, as, and if.
Right. When, as, and if. I got 2 arms to work with,
work with.
2 eyes to see,
yes.
Got 2 ears to
hear with,
but it's wrong to give 2 souls to me. Half of me says, let's get religion. Half of me says, no, we won't. Laugh at me if you really want her. Here I is, chained between do and don't. Part of me says, let's be gwine to Harlem. Part of me says, no, it ain't right. You can sing hymns on Sunday morning, then go truckin' on Sunday night. Tain't weak,
tain't weak,
tain't strong,
tain't wrong,
tain't right,
tain't right,
tain't wrong,
tain't wrong.
I'm striving to do as I should. Good Lord,
he's in a mess of trouble.
Wants to be good. Only half
of him wants to be good.
Figure out when the glow's the glory. Figure out on the judgment day. Figure out when I tells my story. Figure out what the boss will say, will he say? Did that good have coming, will he say? Did I want your right? You can sing hymns on Sunday morning, then go trucking out Sunday night. That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
That's right.
Yeah. the same thing happens every night. Heavenly senses find salvation. Heavenly says, be loaded up. One day I'm singing hallelujah. Next, I'm raring to go to town.
Ain't wrong.
Well, I'm striving to do what I should. Good Lord, I'm in a mess of trouble. Have for me one to be good. Only have a him one to be good.
Just back from a vacation spent mostly in Paris and in the south of France, Miss Beatrice Lilly. Her sojourn in La Belle France has had a marked effect on Auntie B. For some days, she claimed to be able to speak only in pure Parisian French. But we've prevailed upon her to snap out of it, I hope. Presenting La Belle Lilly.
Bonsoir, monsieur et madame. Il me donne beaucoup de plaisir to be with you ce soir. Il faut que je vous dise que vous êtes le charmant, le plus adorable, le plume de matin.
Please, in English.
Qu'est-ce que ça, sir?
Please, in English.
Oh, but I have been away for so long. How you say it, sir? The toast of Paris. Les students, they drag my carriage through the streets. Les officiers, they pinch my little hands. Les gendarmes, they pinch my little cheeks. Rude! It is that I, the toast of Paris, should speak the English? No?
Yes.
No?
Yes.
No?
Yes.
No?
Yes.
Oh, all right. You silly headstrong boy. Ladies and gentlemen, a great many times on the stage and screen, you've heard Miss Ruth Draper and Miss Cornelia Otis Skinner do character sketches and monologues. Well, with apologies to Ruth and Cornelia, I will now try to give you an idea of how they sound to me. That's in there. My scene is a railway eating house on the Western Plains. Now, ladies and gentlemen, in this little sketch, I want you to imagine far too much. Imagine a table here, and a stove there, and a clock up here, a door center, and a station out there. My characters are Etta the Day Girl, Buzz, a hired boy, the Beasley Girls, and old Dr. Brown. At a railway station on the Western Plains. My, but it's powerful cold out tonight. Evening, Etta. Evening, Buzz. Powerful cold out. Better bundle up good. Good night, Etta. Good night, Buzz. Well, the coffee done, Buzz? That's good. Did them thinkers come? Good. I wonder if number 8's on time tonight. Oh, nothing. I was just wondering. What, Phil? The engineer? Oh, what do you mean, Buzz? Think so at all. Lay them coffee cups out, Buzz, and don't you dare to mention it again. Why, that can't be number 8, 10 minutes ahead of time. Oh, look, Buzz, why, it's the snow plow. A plow on its way through the snow to clear the track for number 8 and other trains to follow. Hello there, boys. You want some hot coffee? Good. Hurry up, Buzz. Take some hot coffee out to them there, boys. Did you give it to them? Good. They like it? That's good. Goodbye, boys. Now then, wash them cups and put them back. Hot. Yes, that's number 8, and she's right on time, too. Now, you mind your own business, and don't you dare say anything when Phil comes in. Why, hello, Mr. Scuffle. You're early this month. How's the suspender business? That's good. Good evening, Mr. Gibney. You're early this month, too. How's the belt business? That's good. Ain't many passengers tonight, is there? Do you mind just waiting a second before I serve you? Maybe somebody else to come off the train. Oh, good evening. Phil. Right on time, ain't you? Mind what I told you, Buzz. Pie, Mr. Scuffle? Pie, Mr. Gibney? Pie? Phil? Coffee, Mr. Scuffle? Coffee, Mr. Gibney?
talking. Bill. No, there ain't been much doing. Snowplow went through this while ago. You probably passed it this side of Harper's Landing. Oh, it was clear in the snow way like everything. Oh, must have it gone? I thought it was right on time. I guess the clock's wrong. 15 cents, Mr. Scuffle. 15 cents, Mr. Gibney. 10 cents. Phil. Now, don't, Phil. They're looking. Now, just lay it right on the table. Sure, I'll be here tomorrow night. No, Phil, on account of Buzz. Good night, Mr. Scuffle. Good night, Mr. Gibney. Good night, Phil. My, but it's powerful. Clean up them dishes, Buzz. Why don't you lay down, Buzz, and take a nap? Won't be anything doing now till number 10 goes through at 6 o'clock. Oh, no, I'll just stand here at the fire alone with my socks. Oh, nothing, just how nice and warm it is. How nice it is to see people. But you can just shut your mouth. I ain't thinking of him at all. Yes, I know it's the phone, but who could be calling me up at this time of the night? Hello? Yes, this is a railway station on the Western Plains. What? Number 8 hit the snow plow beside of Harper's Landing and the whole train turned over? How many times? And how many's killed? And they're getting a relief train ready. They're going to send them back here as fast as they can. And it's one of the worst wrecks in the history of the West. You want me to fix up a temporary hospital? Take care of the dead and injured? All right, but I want some details. What happened to the engineer? Hello, what happened to the... Hello, oh, they've hung up. You heard what he said. Run and get the Beasley girls and old Dr. Brown. Tell them to bring bandages, linen, blankets, comforters, witch hazel, and instruments, and things like that. We'll fix up a temporary hospital in the next month. Lie. Tell them to bring slaves to take the ones that ain't hurt so bad in people's houses overnight. Oh, dear, oh, dear. My, but it's powerful. Good evening, Beastly Girls. No, Dr. Brown. I only know what Buzz told you. He hit the snowplow. This side Harper's Landing, they're bringing them here. Buzz, you get boiling water ready. The relief train will be here in a minute. Is everything all right in that room for you, Beastly Girls? That's good. And for you, old Dr. Brown? That's good. Now, they'll be here any minute. Oh, I think I see them coming now. Yes, it's the relief train. Bring them right in here, please. Hello, sir. Oh, my, are you badly hurt, mister? It's your arm? Ain't that horrible? Go right in there. Old Dr. Brown, the Beastie Girls, will attend to it. Are you badly hurt, madam? Is the baby hurt? Oh, it's just you. Well, just accompany me. You'll find a temporary hospital in there with the Beastie Girls and old Dr. Brown's attention. Hello, you there. Hello, you people. Just go right in there at the temporary hospital. You badly hurt, Mr. Scuffle? Oh, that's too bad. Right in there. Did they get you, Mr. Gibney? Ain't that horrible? Right in there, please. Yes, Dr. Brown. You want me to help you set a broken arm? Sure, I will. Just a second. I want to look out the door, see if there's anyone else coming. Hey, wounded people. Is the others all dead? Ain't any of them alive? None of them? Oh, my. Phil. Oh, you all right, Phil? Oh, dear me. You wasn't touched at all? Oh, goody, goody. No, I'll be right back. I'm just going to set a broken arm, Phil. Well, did you like that, Rudy? You wish to kiss my hand? No? You wish to pinch my cheek? You want me to sing to you in French? Yes?
No. I'd like you to talk English so that our listeners can understand you.
Oh, poof, 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 for the listeners. What do I, La Belle Lily, care for the listeners? Poof. Let them eat cake. Yeast cake. No? Well, all right. I will sing for you en anglais. I leave the ballad which I have found under an old rug vendor in the Rue de la Paix. It is called Paris, written by my Parisian friends Arthur Schwartz and Howard Deep. Paris is like a lover. Paris, she like a friend. When you visit Paris, you'll discover it is your journey's end. I was born in Providence, Rhode Island, but La France, not known, she is my land. No, yet adore, yet adore Paris. You have vocals that appeal to me. Oh, to songs of sad
food soup so of lead. The onion soup so not bad in Paris. Come see, come so. That's how I feel when I'm in Paris. Your right bank, your left bank are part of my heart. Oh, yet at all. Paris, yeah, Paris, hey, Paris. I love everything about Paris. I love everyone, and everyone loves me. Les garçons, les gendarmes, les gamins, les misérables, les, tout le monde. Sometimes Paris, she is nothing like the babbling brooks, n'est-ce pas? Sometimes she is cruel. Ah, but when you are in love in the spring, then Paris, she is glorious, dear. Hey, come on. April in Paris, May in the Montmartre, June in January. Me, moi. When I am in Paris, I am how you say it. Don't tell me now. Happy? Avec mon homme, I go to the bois. I dine at the foyer. I am as if it is not so, content. Eh, comment? L'amour. Toujours l'amour. C'est Paris. Toujours l'amour. L'amour the merrier. Or you can have your New York with its rush, rush, rush. Your London, avec its tea and men's shirts. Give me Paris. I love Paris. I could kiss the Champs-Élysées, kiss the Rue de la Paix, kiss the Saint-Honoré, kiss the Montmartre, kiss your right bank, your left bank, a part of my heart. Oh, get
Graham McNamee used to be a concert baritone. He'd average 100 recitals a year, covering all 48 states. This is said to be a record for a concert singer, and on this program, Graham has set another record. I'm sure no other announcer has helped so many young people as he has. Continue the good work, Graham.
Thanks, Rudy.
Regular listeners, faithful through these many years, and to our ever-welcome occasional tuner-inners, tonight's show has opened a new season. I hope it has given you some idea of the fine things to come this fall. We confidently believe that each of the weeks ahead will provide added reasons for your continued attention. Don't miss next week's show, with a special attraction now being prepared by our Newsweek colleagues. This is Rudy Valley bidding you all good night.
Bravest of the brave is the left and right, and to carry on, they are singing a song as they march along.
Selection, Here's Love in Your Eye, is from the production of Big Broadcast of 1937. This is the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company.